America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We welcome you back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Cadobio. It is Chris Algieri. We are powered by PPV.com. It is a very busy PPV.com summer. We're almost there. We're almost in Vegas for Manny Pacquiao versus Mario Barrios. Tim Zhu going up against Fandora for a second time. Angel Ferreiro versus Pitbull Cruz. What you will hear, we will talk about on this very episode, a contender for Fight of the Year. They are running it back. It's a loaded card, and you can watch it along with us on PPV.com. We will be there ringside and in a live interactive chat. We will be there creating content. We will be there eating red meat on the Las Vegas Strip, because that's what we do best on Fight Week. You know it by now, so thank you, PPV.com. It is July 7th. We are fresh off of a 4th of July weekend. We have a lot of crazy boxing week coming up. I have my new Yankee fitted on because it is a New York fight week. Chris Algieri, who is in Florida.
The Yanks, man. The Yank back. I got to come up and get a game one of these.
They suck right now.
It doesn't matter. I'm still going to support my Yanks, okay? I mean, we're talking about over the weekend, 4th of July. They're like, Yanks versus Mets, blah, blah, blah.
Listen, Yankee it was pretty awesome to see that. 4th of July, Yanks Mets.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I mean, it would have been better if we had done better, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. I come from a split family. My dad's parents were Mets fans, and then my brother and I played baseball, and we were Yankees fans. So, like, we always watched baseball with my Italian grandparents, Sam and Maria, Annie, and we were always, like, at ends because they were diehard Mets, and me and my brother were like, no, it's Yanks.
That's fun. That's what makes it even more fun. Now when they're both good or, like, somewhat good, like, they were both in first at one point. Now they're falling on hard. And then the Soto thing. But it is a New York fight week. You got the ring card with Berlanga, Shiraz, Shakur, and Zepeda over in Queens, about less than a mile from my apartment at the U.S. Open site. And on Friday, you have Taylor Serrano 3 at Madison Square Garden featuring some of the best women's talent you can ever assemble. That's on Netflix. I'll be part of that whole fight week. I am hosting an open workout / fight night. They're putting two fights on an open workout at the Oculus subway station, World Trade Center. Me and Corey Erdman.
That's cool. Is it is it pro or amateur?
Pro.
How many
Crystal
fights?
Crystal Rizzo, two sanctioned fights, and then all the women will work out, get in the ring, like Taylor and Serrano will get in the ring, hit the mitts. But in between all that, we have two sanctioned fights. It's live on Netflix, YouTube, and MVP YouTube, me and Corey Erdman. But it's from the Oculus, which is an insane venue to do a fight at. Like, it's that brand new subway station that looks like...
I love that.
It's wild.
I love that. I love that idea because open workouts can be pretty boring. You know, guys go out there and just kind of ho-hum around. Throw some fights in the middle in there. Get it live in there. Yeah, I like that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I was told no suit jacket. Just a, what was the word they told me? They said wear stylish street clothes.
I mean, that's kind of like your, that's your middle name, isn't it?
Yeah. Stylish.
Like suits for you is tough. Suits is like, I got to go buy a new suit.
Right.
This guy's like, I gotta go shopping for the weekend. Stylish street clothes, though. That's you, dude.
I need Suit Supply to sponsor me. If you're listening, anyone at Suit Supply. I mean, the guy, when I went for a suit last night, he recognized me from John Boy Media. So maybe next time I go in, they'll be boxing fans. Let's get right into it. It is a very busy episode. It's the mid-year. July, we're in July. It's a loaded month of boxing, but it's also the mid-year. What we like to do on this show every single year is the mid-year award show. And this year, I opened it up for the fans, our listeners, to able to vote on Fight of the Year, Performance of the Year, Knockout, Moment, and Story of the Year. It's been I would say an up and down first 6 months. We had some big fights. We had some big moments. The Tank Roach fight probably was one of the bigger fights of the first half of the year. We had some big announcements, the TKO stuff. We had the May 2nd debacle, which the reverberations from that are still being felt today as Turkey tweets about Tom and Jerry every hour. We're talking about a shrinking ring. So that right there is a wild weekend, May 2nd. That's part of that's the good, bad, and the ugly of boxing, Chris. It's been an interesting 6 months of 2025 of boxing.
Listen, I'll take interesting. I mean, we've had a couple really, really phenomenal years, almost like the entire year through and through. The last 2 years have been awesome. We've had some bad years also that you and I have been together covering this stuff, but I'll take interesting. You know, we've had a bad year where fights were literally just falling through, not happening, big stretches where there was no fights. We're at least getting the fights. We have a lot to talk about. So I'm not mad about interesting. I'm mad about bad fights. I'm mad about things not happening. I'm mad about matchups that just fall apart. But we really haven't had that, so I'll take it.
There's been good fights. There's also been a lot of chatter. There's been fights being made left and right because of Turkey's influence and his power in the sport. It's been a good year. It's been a good year. We'll start with fight of the year. And this,
I can't believe we're halfway through the year. How about that? Can we discuss that for a second?
Like a time is flying. We're on a flying rock, and we're just. Or on a floating rock flying through time. We're not on a flying rock. That'd be crazy.
we're gonna blink and we're gonna be in tuxedos doing our year end awards. That's how fast this year.
I know. I'm trying to savor it. Trying to savor the summer. Trying to savor every moment, guys. Not to get sappy on you, but let's go fight of the year to open it up. Frigate. We'll start with the biggest one. This is reverse award show etiquette. Let's just go fight of the year, movie of the year, film of the year, which they do last. We're doing it first. That's how we operate here. Thank you to everyone that voted, too. This is really cool to see when you put something out there. Is anyone out there listening? Yes, they are. And they want to be involved. Our listeners are the best. And they voted with a vengeance. Fight of the Year, the categories are Eubank Ben, Inoue Cardenas, which Chris was on the call for, Fierro Cruz, which will be running it back next week on PPV.com, and Joshua Buatsi versus Callum Smith, which was a slugfest. And 51% of the vote went to Eubank versus Ben. Surprised by that?
I kind of figured that. Recency bias. Also, a lot of eyes are on it. It became kind of an event, especially all the stuff with their dads beforehand, all the buildup, crazy amount of marketing going into that fight. So, not surprised at that one. It wasn't my choice, but you know, I get it.
Chris, your choice only landed 9.5% of the vote, which was Buatsi versus Smith. But you are a fan of the sweet science. You go against the grain, you know? 9.5
votes. It was just high level and action-packed, and they hurt each other. So I that's what I think of the fight of the year type stuff is.
Well, that was a really good fight. Second place was 27%, Inoue versus Cardenas, which was... I mean, that was like a movie. That if you really think about it, after the weekend we had with some really bad fights, the Canelo stuff and the Times Square, we settled in on Sunday night, which for what we thought was going to be an Inoue knockout, he was a very heavy favorite. Little did we know that Ramon Cardenas is like, I'm going to make this my night. I'm going to come away from this as a fan favorite. I'm going to drop Inoue, not just like flash knockdown. Inoue was flattened. Down hard. You were there, Chris. You were ringside for that. That was, and he gets up Inoue, and then for the next two rounds, they are whizzing punches at each other. I remember vividly Cardenas narrowly missing Inoue's chin when his chin was very vulnerable for those remaining six minutes after he went down until he got his legs back, and then eventually stops Cardenas like he always does. That script that I just explained. That's fight of the year type of stuff.
Dude, the energy in that arena was out of control. I was calling the fights and on my seat, like as if I was a fan. It was so cool to be there. And like you said, whizzing by each other's chins is a perfect way to explain it. Because they were both throwing hellacious, deadly punches. Just minute missing, just landing. It was incredible. I mean, Naio Inoue, that dude has ice in his veins. Those punches were whizzing by him. And he was in danger. He was in real danger of those shots because he knew it could hurt him. He didn't care. He was just trying to get to Cardenas, get him out of there. I thought it was a great stoppage. Cardenas argued it, but he was taking a lot of damage. It wasn't going to get any better. But tremendous, tremendous fight. I didn't have this as number one. I wanted to because of the way it made me feel. I thought I was going to be biased because I was there. But also, it's just a little bit of a short fight. I like a fight of the year to be longer, drawn out, more action.
Yeah, this was one of the widest runaway winners we had on our award show here is Eubank Ben. I'm kind of surprised by that. I thought Inoue Cardenas, considering how popular Inoue is, considering that weekend. But Eubank Ben, you're right. It had the casual hook. It had the storylines. It had a Rock'em Sock'em Rocky.
It was the WWE, dude. It was the WWE. Yeah. It wasn't the highest level in terms of the action. You know, they didn't really match up that great, but they threw a ton of punches. They were able to find each other. I'm not knocking the fight at all. I just didn't think it was going to be number one.
I knew that you weren't going to have that. It wasn't technical enough for you. Not technical enough for Chris.
I like guys who are high level. I like Eric Morales and Barrera as the best trilogy over.
Oh, they had everything. That fight.
Over Arturo Gatti and Mickey Ward, because it was action, but it was also super high level. So I like the high level stuff.
Yeah, Eubank Ben, like what they lacked in skill made up for it in entertainment. Like, or I should
grit
say, like,
and will.
Yeah, grit and will plays out very well in boxing. That turns into a slugfest. That turns into, in the scene, everything in it, the dad showing up, the anticipation of this fight, everything that Ben went through in terms of him. Self-inflicted wounds with the PEDs. It had everything. And then
how long this fight took to make?
I mean, years. 35 years in the making.
Well, yeah, literally.
Dads. But that, yeah, then the timeline for the kids to get into the ring was crazy. And then after all that, you would expect like an okay fight. You would expect like, how many times have we seen a very hyped up fight? A fight that was like manufactured. This is a manufactured fight because neither of them have titles. This is a money fight. Those don't always perform well. Those don't always live up to the expectations. This one did, and when everything goes right in boxing, I remember that's the feeling I had after this fight, was when everything goes exactly right, it's the best sport in the world, and you're left like buzzing. I remember walking outside my apartment and just I needed to go for a walk because I felt I had so much like energy in me, and I was like, this is what boxing is all about. Not the highest level, but fun, and boxing needs that. All these fights were great, especially Fierro Cruz. I want to give them some love too.
So I almost made that my number one. That fight was awesome. I can't wait for the rematch. That one was like, that was a sleeper good fight going in, where I was saying, I'm like, hey, this guy Fierro is tough as hell. Like, this could be a real fight. And then they go out there and do what they did, and then everyone's like, "Oh man, this fight's awesome!" Like, and they're like, "Oh, what? That came out of nowhere." I'm like, "Not really. If you really knew these guys at all, if you looked at their records and see, you know, what they do out there, I think these guys can't miss, and we could end up getting a trilogy out of these two, which would be pretty awesome."
Yeah, if you listen to our show that week, we were telling everyone that was listening, like, I'm telling you guys, do not miss this fight. Be in your seats if you're going, like, be sitting down on your couch if you're watching on PPV.com. This is the fight, and now they're going to run it back. I mean, that card is looking mighty strong with Pacquiao, Barrios, Zou, Fandora, Fierro, Cruz next week.
So, coming up right around the corner, Dan. Right around the corner.
Right around the corner. Basically packing my bags right now. Let's get to performance of the year. This is one of my favorite awards because it's an individual award and it gives you, like, there are a lot of great performances. I actually went beyond the four categories. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. I had 7 because there were that many good performances this year, or I had 6.
You mean choices, not categories?
Yes, choices. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Performance of the year.
You're confusing me over here.
the choices are Nakatani over Nishida. Gary Antoine Russell's destruction of Venezuela, Rio. Good. Floyd Schofield destroying Tevin Farmer in 90 seconds. Boots Ennis stopping Stanionis inside of 7 rounds. Rezendez's upset over Caleb Plant. And then Dmitry Bivol getting revenge over Archer Beterbiev. This one, pretty close. 34% went with Bivol over Beterbiev, making it the Inside Boxing Live fan choice for performance of the year.
Nice. That's what I had. I was surprised. I didn't think that was going to make it because it was kind of like so long ago. And even though it's only our 6-month award, like, that was like so long ago. But absolutely, Bivol's performance in that fight, coming off the first fight where, you know, it was neck and neck. I thought Bivol won the first one. The second one, I was like, all right, this guy, he figured out what he needs to do in order to beat this man. And I think he's going to beat him every time from here on out. And he just showed a different gear. He showed ability to adapt. he showed an ability to get better. Old dogs still can learn new tricks, and Dmitry Bivol did that night. So that was my number one for sure. I'm surprised that the fans actually picked that too, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and now we don't know when they'll ever fight again. We know that they're contracted to fight again. We don't know when it's going to be. It could be in Russia. It could be when Beterbiev is 50 years old. We will get more on that
later. The rematch came around so fast, it's wild that this one is taking this long, making me think it's probably not going to happen. But I saw something that Beterbiev said. He's like, how old are you going to wait for me to get before we fight this last fight?
That was a line. That was a bar. He dropped the mic after that. That's a good line. Yeah, so that got 34%. And then second place, this is actually really close. Second place, 18.8 was Boots over Stanionis. And then 18.1 had Schofield over Farmer. And then 12% of our listeners chose Resendez's over Plant. But yeah, the Bivol Beterbiev, I thought was an easy choice because it was the highest level fight. It was it was the most worthy opponent of all these other guys. Like, no offense to Stanionis or Plant or Venezuela or Farmer. But this was like a 50-50 fight heading in. So to see Bivol's performance, make the adjustments, stand in the pocket, and hand Beterbiev his first loss of his career, he deserves performance of the year so far. Schofield over Farmer getting 18%. That's interesting to me because of how he did it. And no one was saying, all right, he's going to go in there and do it in the first round.
No, that's also recency bias. It just happened. It's you know, the way that it happened. Context matters always when it comes to things. So it's how he did it, who he did it to, and the fact that it was last weekend. So I think all of that goes in line. That would be, I would say, breakout performance of the year for me.
Yeah.
Would be that Floyd Schofield fight. Schofield.
Yeah. That definitely breakout star is born type of performance. Gary Antoine Russell didn't get a lot of votes. He got 10%, but man, I remember watching that fight.
For me, probably number two.
That was, he's not going to get the pub because he doesn't fight enough and people don't remember that. It was like the third fight on the tank card. The tank fight got swallowed up all the attention that night.
Yeah.
But Gary Antoine Russell ran through Raya, like ran through him. I got to pull up the stats.
He did it with good boxing. He did it with skill. He outwilled him, skilled him, strengthened him, everything. You name it, he beat him in every single way, completely dominated that fight and showed who he is. That's another breakout fight of the year type fight. But in terms of performance, I probably would have had that as number two because I was so impressed. I didn't know he had that in him after watching that Pueyo fight. But, I mean, he really showed up, showed out. And Ryo, dude, he was on a tear, man. He was like, he was a new like golden child of 140, winning that title, beating Cruz. That was a big deal. So, man, that's definitely a good one too.
Russell threw 957 punches in 12 rounds. He landed 252, which is a very high number. Landed almost 40% of his power shots. Limited Venezuela to just 127 connects. Yeah, that was a really very good performance. And then, of course, Nakatani had a great night. Boots, his Virtuoso win, his probably signature win, and then Resendez, that would be upset of the year. Upset of the year, Resendez over Plant. Yeah, all great performances. Year, congratulations, sure. Everybody. Let's go to knockout of the year. This was a runaway train. Brian Norman over Jin Sasaki, 75% of the vote. It was one of the most coldest knockouts you'll see. Left hook, right? Left hook?
Scary. Left hook.
Left hook.
Pull straight back, left hook.
Ooh, nasty stuff. That wins our knockout of the year. That's what I picked. I'm sure you picked the same.
Yeah, I did. And that's the runaway knockout of the year. And that's going to be hard to beat even with another 6 months. Did you see that report that Jin Sasaki lost 6 weeks of his memory? Doesn't remember the training camp, doesn't remember the fight, doesn't remember any of it. Woke up and lost 6 months of his life from that left hook. That's scary.
Beyond scary, man.
That's he's a young guy, like, too. Young guy. It's not like
I didn't know that. I didn't read that.
Yeah. There's an article out there that he said he lost 6 weeks of memory, which is truly scary and reminds us as we're watching what fighters are going through out there, what they're putting on the line out there. So keeps it real. But that knockout was tremendous. I have a, I like the honorable mentions. Daniel Dubois knocking out Joshua. I thought that was
last year, though.
That was last year?
Yeah.
Why do I feel like that was like yesterday?
Because the weeks are all meshing together because life, like, it's impossible to keep track of boxing. It's impossible to keep track of boxing in the
past.
What
month was that? Am I losing it?
I'm definitely no, because someone out. No, you're not, because someone on Twitter, a bunch of people on Twitter said, "How do you not have Joshua Dubois in here?" And I said, "Bro, that was last year.
Wow,
it was last summer, April. Wait, no. It was last year, bro. I'm not losing my mind either.
Was it that long ago though? Like part of that. Hold on, I gotta pull up
Anthony Joshua's box right here.
Oh no, September. Yeah, so it was that long ago. Shit.
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah, that was September.
That was probably the knockout of the year last year. I only had three choices here. I couldn't find a fourth. Fabio Wardley over Justice Hooney, that where he was down on the cards, pretty much needed the knockout to win. Spectacular. That was really cool.
So was the rematch when he dented his skull. That one too.
That was the first fight, yeah.
He could be on there twice.
Yeah, that was Wardley. Yeah. Dave Allen over Fisher, which was kind of like a domestic dust up. Kind of barroom brawl.
Fun local guys.
There's Stephen Shaw had a big knockout on Pro Box that a bunch of people threw my way.
Yeah, that was brutal. That was he fought that really tall former NFL player, and I mean, just knocked his block off.
I saw
that. Tall guys going down always looks better. Always looks more dramatic.
Anytime Tommy Hearns went down, when Duran hit that jaw and he went down like a freaking tree. Yeah. Anytime a tall guy goes down, I'm yelling timber if I'm on the call.
Well, no, Duran. You know, so Tommy knocked out Duran. That was him.
What the fuck, Dan?
When Hagler dropped him, it was like.
That's what I meant.
Tall guys, like it's like a building falling down. They fall in like sections. It's like when Marvin hits him with that last left hand, he's flying him in his head. Boom! And Tommy just like falls over his body and just literally is completely slumped, and there's no life in him, just crashing to the ground. It looked like a building falling down.
Me messing that up, I'll hear it in the comment section. Some guy came up to me in L.A. at the Jake Paul event and was like, who was the Mexican guy that I didn't know, the showman? Paez? The guy, the Mexican.
Jorge Paez, yeah.
Yeah. Some guy came up to me and was like, hey, Dan. He's like, I can't believe you didn't know who Jorge Paez was. Huge fan of the show. And I was like,
dude, I gave you shit for that too.
Yes. I give myself shit for it.
That was rough. That was rough.
The guy was kidding. He was laughing. He was messing. He busted my balls. But I said to the guy, I was like, hey, I could have just pretended I knew who he was. I said, no. I took my L. I don't know why that. I just didn't know that guy growing up.
Your dad must have kicked you in the nuts for that.
Yeah. He was like, come on, man. Like, you didn't know him. He was
Papa Bob.
Papa Bob. Yeah, so
that's the thing. I have an advantage. I'm a little older than you, so
slightly. I don't know. That was just it was nice to have someone come up to me though, a listener.
Yeah,
say, you know, no, they were in the trenches.
But that happens with me and Paulie too. Like, he's a couple years older than me, so like he's like a little fresher on some things more than I am, and it bites me in the ass all the time.
Yeah, knockout of the year, Brian Norman. Congratulations. You get nothing from us besides respect.
You get airtime. Airtime's big. Airtime's
respect. Yeah, we keep your name in the. We keep your name out there, which these guys should be thanking us. We need fighters. Thank you, Dan and Chris, for keeping my name relevant. Oh, you're welcome. I'll continue to do it. Moment of the year.
I have some guys hit me up. Liam Parro the other day. I talked to him in the DMs. He hit me up for something nice I said to him. And Virgil Ortiz. He hits me up every once in a while.
That's
he had
good.
A funny one.
Thank you.
He sent me something that I it was a comedy meme, something that I clicked on and liked. And he sent it to me. He goes, this is crazy that you like this. It was like a funny meme.
Yeah, because Instagram has that now. You can see what other people, what reels people are liking. Be careful what reels you like out there. Okay, everybody.
Yeah.
And also, it's crazy. Well, Instagram used to have an explore page, which I think ended a lot of relationships. It'd be like Dan Canobio liked 8 videos, and then you could see like the little thumbnail of them.
Yep.
And so I remember
all girls' butts.
Yes, butts. Yes. Just bad stuff. I remember this guy we worked with. I'm not going to say his name at a former company. He was like a married guy, middle aged, and I went to the explore page on Instagram, and it's like blank blank liked 8 photos, and you can click on the photo, and it was all like just girls in like bikinis, just butts, and like it was public. So I went to my like boss. I was like, hey, man, like, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to go about this. I don't know the guy that well. You'd know him better. I said, you got to let him know that we can all see what he's liking. And he went and told the guy, and the guy was so embarrassed, but he was also like, oh my God, thank you. Like, my wife saw that. She'd kill me.
Instagram got rid of that. Yeah, thank God.
It was like it was better than looking at pics on Instagram. It's just, let me go to the Explore page, see what freaks are out there liking. It's like a voyeur type of thing.
Well, that's when every girl is an FBI agent anyway, so they can find all that out. But that definitely helped their case.
Oh boy, moment of the year. I love these storylines, the juicy stories.
This is your category for sure. This is all Dan Canobio here.
Yeah, this is the shit that I go crazy for, the boxing stuff, the crazy moments. Canelo, Jake Paul, Turkey saga. I have this as a moment because if you remember, it happened really fast. It happened almost in like the span of 72 hours. Canelo was going to fight Jake Paul. All of a sudden, Turkey swoops in, gives Canelo that extra fight, the skull fight, throws him an extra, whatever, like $100 million. And now Canelo has a four-fight deal with Riyadh. It happened so fast. But to me, it was a moment, not a full-fledged saga slash story for the next category.
I didn't understand that. That's a good explanation there, Dan. Good.
Remember, it happens. Like, we were doing podcasts that they were becoming outdated within like a couple hours. Yeah. And, you know, Turkey was tweeting at us, and I was trying to go to sleep, and I was waking up to news, and it was a quick saga, quick moment, but fans didn't care. I only got 7 votes, 4% for
they probably didn't know what the hell you're talking about. I was a little confused myself.
Couldn't explain that one. When Inoue got dropped, that was a moment. 11%. Tank taking a knee. Knee gate. Which became a huge story. Probably should have lost the fight. It just turned his career into a little bit of a tailspin. Gets 39.9% of the vote. But number one at 44% is when Eubank Sr. stepped out of that SUV with his son and flashed that smile, put his arm around his son. Crowd erupted. I jumped off my couch, got me hook, line, sinker, and got 44% of our listeners. Chris Eubank Sr. showing up.
Who's a bigger character than Chris Eubank Sr. in our sport today?
Doing this.
Is there anyone? No. I could watch that guy do laundry. Everything he does is entertaining. Everything he says.
Where's
the way he said? We do need more of him. The way he speaks, the way he says things, the ideas that he has in his head. I mean, his look, his outfits, everything about that man is entertainment. He charisma. Rules. Charisma oozes out of him. Very different than his son.
Charisma,
both
like
the sons.
Charisma and like a little bit of like false, like way too confident.
Just over the top. He's got like he's very regal the way he is. Yeah. It's very over
what
the top.
What is that weird
blue
badge?
Blood.
What is that badge that he wears?
I think it has something to do with the commission, I believe. I think it's like he is like some sort of commissioner for the BBOC or something like that. But I actually had Kneegate as my number one. I thought that really threw like the ripples through the sport. But I guess that's more on our side than the fan side, because we had to deal so much with that on the back end, trying to like report what was actually going to happen. We did a bunch of shows on it. I did a bunch of shows for Pro Box on it. Pro Box promotes Lamont Roach, so I get to talk to him personally and interview him and talk about the whole thing. So for me, that was a big deal. But in terms of fans and eyes, yeah, I get that. I mean, I get it. That definitely makes sense too.
It was a moment.
Yes. Yeah. It was WWE, dude. It was coming out of the limo. Yeah. They came out of the limo.
Bro, we knew it was coming, too. That was the funny part. It was like, we knew it was coming, and I still popped. I still, like, jumped up out of my car. Like, I can't believe. I was like, if there was a camera on me, I was kind of just, like, chilling. Like, I wasn't, like, that invested in this card. So, just the undercard was putrid. I was kind of just laying on the couch, like, slumped. Putrid. And then I saw the dad, and I, like, literally jumped out of my seat. Like, that's the type of moment it was. And that's a moment. It was a positive moment. How many moments do we have in boxing that are negative? Like, Kneegate is negative. That's a referee messing up. That's a guy who probably should have lost getting a draw. Like, Lamont Roach doesn't get a win because of incompetence from a referee, a bad moment. That's a crappy moment. Like, that's a
good point. That's a really good point. Generally, the moments are always, like, things that, like, controversy. This was, like, super positive.
Yeah. It's very, and even though it was like a kind of a contrived thing, like it could have been a work. I we'll find out maybe years from now in a documentary about the Eubanks and the Benz, which you know it's going to be made. The Hatfield and the McCoys.
Yeah. I said it was a work from the beginning. I have literally a video of me saying it's a work. He's going to be there. He's going to be there.
So yeah, like the dad said all those nasty things about him.
Yeah.
On purpose. The son played it up in the, right up until the press conference. My dad is not here. His dad's here. Mine isn't. And then, of course, Turkey might have greased him, might have paid him. No, could have been a work from Eubanks Sr. to get paid. He's like, hey, Turkey's handing out checks. Let me fucking milk this.
The Eubanks are very smart. They are very calculated. You see it in the way they fought, the way they box, the way they talk. I mean, say what you will about Chris Eubank Jr., man. That guy, he commands a room at a press conference. He's one of the best press conference views there is because he attacks everybody in the room.
Without raising his voice, too.
And no, he's super calm, cool, collected, calculated. I'm telling you, I can tell that his father loves his son. Like, he's got a lot of pride. He's a proud man. And that pride is exuded out of him onto his son as well. So there was no way that guy wasn't coming to that fight.
That was an awesome moment. They're going to fight again September 20th. I don't know how it lives up to the... That was just about them fighting. Talked about that last week. This is, now it's about them. That's to be like the tagline that we took from some random guy on Twitter. But yeah, knee gate was huge. 40%. Not like it was far right, behind. It was right up there. Mm-hmm. Like when Tank took that knee, I mean, that was like something we're going to remember for a long time. Like that's going to be shown on like highlights. That's going to be on YouTube forever because it changed the course of the fight. He should have got a point there. Steve Willis, I don't know if he's going to resurface this week. I'm going to be looking out for him. Is he going to be refereeing the Taylor Serrano card? I'm going to, he hasn't done any interviews.
He is the New York guy, him and
Harvey Dock.
My man, Harvey Dock. Those are like the New York guys.
Yeah, I'm curious. It's just kind of upended Steve Willis's career. It's upended Tank's career because now we have a rematch that I think we're getting August 16th. And you know Tank's going to be asked about that knee. You know Tank's going to be asked. He says that he had grease in his eye from the braids. That fight turned into, like, we went into that fight week. This could be like a Tank. He's either going to knock Roach out or he's going to run through him again. And then we're going to look for Tank in some bigger fights after this. And then midway through the 56th round, we're like, oh, crap, this is a fight. And Lamont Roach is holding his ground. Now this is turning into a must watch. If you haven't ordered it yet, you might want to just start ordering. Tune in now. And how's this fight going to end? And then the knee comes. And then for the remaining couple rounds, we're all thinking, like, what the heck was that? Like, well, I remember my vantage point. I was up there with Goosen on the stage. And I was like, dude, did he just take a knee? Like, what's going on? And Goosen, who's seen everything, speechless.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to say or do.
That's how I was, too.
Right? What was your vantage point?
I mean, I'm sitting there, and I was in the press row. Yeah. And I was in the live chat. You and I weren't together for that fight. And I got people in the crowd because it was packed to the gills. I've never seen so many people in Barclays. Like, they were just
smoking weed like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, like without no qualms at all. Just
I was pretty high too. Add to this.
All of the, that's another thing. Maybe I didn't react because of that, because all the secondhand.
Everyone was stoned. Maybe Joe Goosen was just baked and he couldn't say anything because he was baked out of his skull.
But there was like, where there's supposed to be people are walking, there was just people standing there, just like, it was like standing room only in Barclays, which is insane. And I had guys literally looking over their shoulder being like, hey, yo, Chris, who's winning the fight? Like, just like that.
It was
like
awesome that. Atmosphere, man.
Yo, Chris, what's up with that knee? And I was like, yes. Man, I don't know. But immediately after that, I was like, I mean, we weren't told to score the knee. I was like, I had Tank ahead a little bit, but like with the knee, he loses. I mean, with the knockdown, he loses. But yeah, that was wild.
And then like the walkout after, no one left. It was just like a sea of humanity in the
waiting through humans
corridor of Barclays, because everyone couldn't believe, number one, that Tank didn't just run through it. Everyone couldn't believe the knee. It was like the type of thing where it was instant chatter. Instant, like, discussions were happening in the Barclays after that fight. So that was a huge moment. I think the rematch.
But also, everyone was unresolved because they weren't really sure who should have won and did win. So everyone kind of hung around trying to figure it out. Like, it wasn't done yet. Like, this is an open-ended book. The chapter's not closed. So a lot of people hung out because of that. But good hopefully point. We get this fight very soon.
Yeah, and Unresolved should be the name of the pay-per-view.
Ooh, that's good. Unresolved. I like that.
Unresolved.
Big, you know, poster. August 16th. I hope we're getting close to the deadline here, man. Like, it's already past the deadline. Like, we're in the red zone of them announcing
that
fight.
Within 6 weeks. Like, we're not, like, just training camp should be, like, well on their way.
They might be in training camp because a lot of times the fighters are told, and then the public's the last to find out. So that's true. Very well they could be training. As I'm sure you know, like, you know, your manager, your opponent, like, just start training, then we'll announce it. Like, you don't exactly need 8 weeks in today's day and age with social media. You don't need the five-city press tour. But in terms of, like, people, tickets and stuff, like, people need to plan out if they're going to be in Vegas August 16th.
Well, that's another thing. It's in Vegas. Like, they sold the Barclays. You know, I think they can sell it to Barclays very easily once again with very little timing. Vegas is a little different. Vegas is different. Because you got all these East Coast people. They're both East Coast fighters, and they're going to have people book their trips.
I think they're I don't know what's going on behind the scenes over there, but you know, Tank sells tickets, and it'll be a good experiment to see if he'll even sell tickets on a month notice, even though this is a huge rematch. It's a rematch. This is the biggest fight of Tank's career. Like, this is legit. This is going to be one of the bigger fights. I think it's that event was probably the biggest event of the first half because it took place in the United States. It was massive, and I was on it, of course. I was the ringside reporter, and you know, so it's a big event.
Of course, that makes it bigger.
It's number one. I interviewed both guys in the locker room. I picked up on the confidence of Lamont Roach. We need that. Run that back. Let's go to our final category here, and that's story of the year. This is big because boxing's all about stories. It's all about narratives. It's all about chatter. That's how we do two podcasts a week because of all these stories. Coming in last, 9 votes, is the top-ranked ESPN split. Not the biggest story, but a story nonetheless, because we're closing in on, I think, 20 more days left of the top-ranked ESPN partnership. Xander Zayas will fight in the final ESPN show. It could be the last boxing event ever on linear television, which I don't know.
I'll be there. I'm calling it. So
it's in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. See you there. We'll see. We'll see what happens with Top Rank. I'm hearing a lot of different things. They could remain on ESPN in a smaller package. They could then space out their other fights on different platforms. They got something up their sleeve because they have a big roster. It's just not a star-laden roster. Very good roster, nonetheless. But that comes in last. Second here is, I thought should be number one, is Runners in Boxing after May 2nd. Like, we're still talking about this. The Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia performances, William Skull. What that did for the narrative, what that did for podcasts, we should thank them, even though it was putrid boxing. We're talking about changing the rules. We're talking about red cards, green cards, smaller rings, shrinking rings, Tom and Jerry, Devin Haney getting dragged. Like, that, I believe that was a massive story, but only got 22%.
It's only a massive story because Turkey made it a massive story. This is nothing new in the sport. We've been talking about this kind of stuff for forever. De La Hoya had, you know, got the runner moniker when he fought Trinidad. This is nothing new. So it's, I don't know. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Neither did the fans. Obviously, the listeners.
Guess I was wrong here. Guess I'm wrong.
Yeah, no. It was only big because Turkey's been tweeting about it for 2 months.
Yeah, that's true.
He didn't like how that fight went, and so he's been keeps pushing the narrative. The Tom and Jerry line is awesome. I love it. I think that's really funny. No more Tom and Jerry fights. But that's, you know, that's part of what's keeping this alive as well. It's kind of humorous.
Two things: Turkey amplifying it for sure. He's the biggest power broker in boxing right now. Another thing is that it all happened in the same weekend. It happened with three of the biggest names in the sport. Ryan Garcia, horrible performance. Even worse than Devin Haney. Devin Haney won, but he still didn't look great. He's getting the brunt of it. And then Canelo Skull, 24 hours later, not even. The lowest combined connects in a 12-round fight in the history of CompuBox. So, like,
that was miserable.
That played into it as well. It was a perfect storm of slop that led to, you know, a lot of conversations on podcasts, a lot of discussions on how we can improve it. interesting because it makes us think, as you know, media guy, podcaster, whatever we are, like, what can we do? Like, are we going to see a change? And we might, or is this something that it's just we're going to have to deal with as fans, because it's a sweet science. Everyone boxes differently. I think
one thing we're not going to see is shrinking rings as the fight goes on. That's not going.
Yo, people are reporting that as if it's like a fact. Like Turkey, like
what is it, Squid Games, guys? Come on,
Squid Games. The ring, but that would be, like, how would that actually work? If the ring shrunk. Like what? I know they have a lot of money. Ring Magazine and Turkey. Like, I don't think they have enough money to make that technology.
No, no, and it'd be so dangerous. Guys get rolled to ankle and cut their foot off. It's
not. All of a sudden, like, you're fighting and you just see the ring, like, shrinking behind you, like, you fall, like,
the fact that he's able to troll certain media members and they bite is ridiculous to me. The media is so, like, blind.
Well, I think we're learning about this Turkey fellow is, Eddie Hearn has said it in a bunch of interviews, is that he's a kind of like a jokester. And, like, we don't 100% understand his sense of humor. Like, he'll tweet stuff out about Shakur this week, which we would look at as, like, oh, it's kind of disrespectful. But it's really just him just, like, either trying to promote or his sense of humor and us not understanding it. The shrinking ring, I think, was a complete, like, a joke from him. 100%. Just, like, 100%. Just, hey, like, this is funny. Imagine we had a shrinking ring because Shakur runs. And then there's media companies running with it, like, legit, like, shrinking ring on Instagram, like, giant words, as if it was like a real report. Like, do they think that's actually going to happen, or is it just like clickbait? It could be a little bit of, like, more clickbait.
I guess it's clickbait. I feel like some of these media members are dumber than AI. Like, they're just like, oh, there it is, pick it up, boom, use it.
Some guys should be replaced by AI, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically, because I mean, if you're basically just going to report whatever the hell you see, but just grab anything without using any kind of reasoning or critical thinking, then yeah, just your AI.
Well,
you're an aggregator.
That. Yeah, there's certain things you should report on Instagram, and certain things you shouldn't. Like, I run the social media for us, and like. I didn't run with that. But if there's like a fight being made, you do. If there's a rumor, you do.
Even if it's a rumor. Listen, we've been wrong about some of the things that we reported on that were put out there, and that's fine. It happens. Bro. But like that, so not when it's like utter stupidity.
There's so much stuff being thrown out there. 29% had Dana White Turkey TKO boxing announcement. Remember, that was a huge thing when they announced the league or formation of a league, and the pay scale got leaked, and that was a big story. But 42%. I was kind of shocked by this. Went with Canelo Crawford as the story of the year, the announcement. Them getting in the ring together after the skull fight, the ensuing press conferences, all the discussions. You know, we're getting closer and closer to that. What's your excitement level for this fight? I think I'm going to ask you every single week, every single episode, as we get closer to Canelo Crawford. Where is it at right now?
It's still pretty low.
From 1 to 10, what do you have it? You can put a decimal point in there.
I'm probably at like a 4.5. It's still pretty low. It's higher than it was for sure, but like I'm still like I don't know. It's not close enough for me to be like, all right, now I'm really getting turned on by this, because we have a lot of other things coming up that are I think a lot cooler. Yeah. And this still is just, I don't know. It's a bit of an oddity to me. It's really difficult for me to picture them in the ring together when they're in their trunks. I don't know. I'm thinking more short term, like what's in front of me, so I'm not super excited about this yet.
Yeah, it's lacking a little bit of like organic excitement, organic animosity, organic like legacy stuff. I know you could have Max there talking about how this is going to be the most watched fight in the last 50 years. I agree, because it's on Netflix, or like he's harking back to different matchups and what this means historically. It's, to me, it's really hard for me to buy into that. And I think a lot of boxing fans are having issues buying into it because of where Canelo stood on this fight just a year ago or even 6 months ago, poo-pooing it. I don't want it. Won't mean anything. Him saying it won't mean anything for me. It kind of is like his real thoughts on it. But he was presented a boatload of money. He's a prize fighter. I don't blame him. That kind of is in boxing fans' mind. The fact that, you know, Crawford's jumping up so many weight classes without even taking a fight in between or taking a fight at different weight class. Like,
he's also 38.
I think
people are forgetting that. People are forgetting that Crawford's the older man here as well. So, and they're both old. It's not like, you know, what is Canelo's 34?
35
now? Okay, he's 35. And I can't believe Canelo's 35. I didn't think he was that old. Canelo's 35. Crawford's 38. I mean,
34. These are turning 35 in 11 days.
Oh, no. So then he's, all right, damn, then he's 35. You turn 35 in 11 days and you're 35.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I was a lot older than him. No, I guess not.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's a lot of details about this fight which leaves you longing.
So we'll see what the promotion brings, because I think fans are going to be excited for it. I think, you know, they're taking sides, and
for sure,
you know, everyone likes to see Canelo lose. Yeah, he has a lot of haters, but it's not like Crawford has a ton of fans. I'm going to be excited for it. I'm probably around the same as you, 4.5, like five, a little bit of over a five right now. The pressers were okay. They didn't really like get me any more excited about it, but it's a spectacle. Boxing needs spectacles, and this is our big one this year. Could be worse. Can always say that. That's one of my favorite sayings in boxing. Yeah. Could be worse. So that was the story of the year.
My story of the year was the TKO Dana White thing. I thought that was big because the ramifications for potentially changing the whole landscape of the sport are there. I think this is one of those things where it's probably bigger to you and I than to our listeners, because we talk about it so much off air and off screen, trying to figure out, getting inside information, these kind of things. So I'm sorry, listeners. I really voted as a media member and not as a fan. I won't let that happen again. I'm sorry.
I'm a fan first.
I always say that I'm fan first, but
no, damn, you're a media guy now, bro. You're pretty much Stephen A. Smith. You're everything that's wrong with. You're a media guy. You sit in the press row. You got a bunch of podcasts lined up today for PPV.com as their new ambassador.
Yep.
What have you become? Oof. A whole day of podcast?
I'm a shill, dude. I'm a shill of the machine. I'm a cog in the wheel.
You really are.
So for everyone listening, so Dan used to interview me when I was in, you know, fighting in my career, you know, quite a bit. And I used to be on the show a bunch of times. And I always liked Dan. Like Dan, you know, he's a Long Island guy, like similar kind of upbringing. And to a degree. And you know, we kind of had that connection. And similar to how, like, the connection I had with Kevin Rooney. Like,
yes, exactly.
From the area, same age, dudes around the same age kind of thing. So I was like Dan, but I was just telling him, I was like, I hate media, man. I hate doing media. I hate these interviews. I hate how everyone can just do this with a phone and put it up in my face and be like, hey, Chris, what do you think about so-and-so? I used to hate that so much. Not that I'm one of those. I'm not an ambulance chaser. But
if you ever become that, I'm going to be very sad.
Ah, dude, just end it for me. Poison my coffee.
Yeah, I don't see you going that far.
but yeah, now we make a joke. When you live long enough, you become your enemy. And I've Harvey lived long Dent enough said to survive a boxing career, to enter the media space, and now become a media member. R.I.P.
I think you'll have a bigger media. You had a great career in the ring, don't get me wrong, but I think you're going to have an even bigger career outside the ring as a media member.
I agree. I think that I'm going to do way more in the sport from now until I'm out of it than I did when I was actually
you know,
in it competing. I'm not going to be in the Hall of Fame for my fight career. I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame for what
it could
I
be
do
both.
Outside.
Cumulative?
Potentially, but, you know.
World champion?
I would probably vote against me going in, but I will. I will earn it as an outside influence.
Joe Torre he had a good career. Like Joe Torre, I think he had like 2,000 hits. Wasn't going to make the Hall of Fame as a player alone. But when you go manage the Yankees and you win 4 World Series, they looked at his entire career, his contributions to the sport, your contributions to it. You have a long way to go. Don't get me wrong. Like a lot more podcasts, a lot more shilling, a lot more of that to go before you make the Hall of Fame. But it's there. And you're definitely on the right trajectory, kid.
I always think of it as a participant and non-participant. So, but I get, maybe if you guess you combine them, but whatever. I don't know. But again, you're right. I think I have a lot more to. You're absolutely right. You have a lot more to do outside.
Yeah, and it starts next week in Las Vegas for Pacquiao Fight Week. Algieri's going to be interviewing Pacquiao, guys. That's going to be wild. I can't wait to see that. I can't wait to see that interaction. I'm going to be rolling on that when he comes up to you. Like everything, we're going to have so much content next week. Because Pacquiao is coming back, which is
so
wild.
Much fun. It's gonna be nuts. I'm excited. I'm really excited. I've been watching so many interviews and videos and getting ready for this. It's Pac-Man is something else, man. The guy is a movement.
Damn right it is. I know not a lot of fans are thinking about it yet because we have huge fight weeks with Taylor Serrano 3, Shakur Zepeda and the Berlanga card. But the next 2 weeks should be really fun. And then next week is Usyk Dubois, which we're going to have to watch in Vegas during the day, I guess. We're going to have to – that's a – if that's a 6 o'clock Eastern fight, that's going to be 3 on fight day in Vegas. So we're going to have to get together and watch that. Bam, fighting.
We might have to do that from the media room with everybody.
That'd be cool.
Depending what we have set up.
That would be cool. That's our award show.
We really got to do. We got to do our fight week blog. I don't know why. Like, people don't know. They don't know the inner workings of all the stuff that happens. You know, I think people would be interested in that.
My younger brother, who he's not really into content. He's a school teacher. Didn't want this life. Didn't want the boxing life. It's like, you should do more. He's smart. He's like, you should do more vlogs, like travel vlogs. Yeah. You know, you were just in California with the Jake Paul thing. Like, people, I did a lot of those. I have to get back to that. You're right. I think we will do a vlog for Vegas. I say that every time, but we never do it. That's it. Predictions. That was it for the awards show. Thank you, everyone that voted. In terms of what's happening the rest of the year, like how we could see things shake out, I think I have it here somewhere. Like, the Usyk heavyweight picture. You got Atoma. Baitenon is just coming down the pike. Everyone's looking at him as the next heavyweight guy. Usyk versus Dubois, like, that's going to be interesting. That happens next week. That could play out the rest of the heavyweights. Fury's talking about coming back. So I think heavyweight still is a big-time story, and it's going to be coming to focus more because there hasn't been a real big heavyweight fight in the first 6 months. Like, none of the fights we didn't bring up heavyweights at all in this previous 40 minutes.
Yeah, so much so that I thought Dubois Joshua was this year. Like, there's been so little heavyweight action. Nothing. I actually am pulling fights from last year into this year. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to. Tank, his fight in August, we hope. That could dictate a lot of things. Is he going to fight Jake Paul? Or is he going to fight Shakur maybe finally? Top Rank's home, which you talked about, Canelo Crawford. So I think those are the biggest stories for the rest of the year. Is Canelo Crawford's going to swallow up a lot of attention? Heavyweight picture is going to come into focus a little bit more. Tank fights again. And then we can see whoever fought in the first half of the year will fight again. Haney Norman, that card.
Which Inoue is going to be back.
Who?
Inoue.
Oh, yeah.
Potentially
twice.
Potentially twice. We'll see about that. I think that MJ fight is going to be a really rough fight.
Yeah, I don't like that. I mean, that's a turkey special is announcing these fights. He did it again.
You can't look past MJ.
He did it again with Bam. Bam is fighting next week.
Yeah, and Robert's concerned about that fight. He's like, this guy, nobody really knows who this guy is. He's super dangerous, and he's right. He's tall, he's long, he can punch. So that's a great point, because I literally talked to Robert about that. And he's like, we got to focus on this guy. Like, we're not thinking about ahead. Like, this is a really tough fight.
Yeah, because over the weekend, Turkey announced that Bam Rodriguez will be fighting on this massive November Riyadh season card against Fernando Puma Martinez. That's a unification if he beats Cafu on next week. And we've seen the one thing about the Riyadh season that it's been great with these fights and all that. But one thing is that a lot of plans have been blown up when fights are being made in the interim. Fights are being planned out, you know, tune-up fights. Or if this guy gets past this guy, then he'll fight on this card. This card, though, is phenomenal. I think this might be the best Riyadh season card we're getting in November. Benavidez versus Anthony Yard literally came out of nowhere, announced over the weekend at 175. Benavidez was supposed to fight Callum Smith, but it turns out Eddie Hearn reveals that Callum asked, they couldn't get to a number that made Callum Smith satisfied, as he's the WBO interim and wants to really hold on to that interim status. So you probably weighed that. Like, do I hold on to this interim status at WBO, which could land me, when you're interim, like, you get that title shot next. It's not like you're the mandatory or whatever. Or do I go into the U.S. and fight Benavidez in the States for, you know, a number, maybe 2 million or something, maybe ask for more. So that fight falls out. And then in steps Anthony Yard. I like that fight. Benavidez Yard.
I like Anthony Yard a lot in general. I like him literally against anyone in that division. But when it's Benavidez, he's kind of like the other guy in their division I'd like to watch no matter who. I want to see him fight absolutely everyone as well. So put those two guys together, I think that's a can't miss. I think you got Benavidez who throws tons of punches. You got Anthony Yard who is a dog and will go out in a shield and throw bombs and he can really punch. So no, I think it's a great fight. And we're also going to see it as a litmus test. We're going to see what David Benavidez is at 175 because Yard has been in with Beterbiev and gave him a fight. You know, he's that guy. He was in there with Kovalev and was this close. So he's one of those guys. He's like, he's right there, but he's not that championship level caliber, but he pushes everyone.
Yeah, I like this fight for a number of reasons. Benavidez is now, this will be his third fight at 175. Vodzik as the opener was a great test right away. Morel, awesome fight. I should have been, could have been listening on Fight of the Year. Probably should have been.
Yeah, good fight.
And now Yard. Like these are, he's working his way up really nicely to the Bivols and the Beterbievs, which leads you to the second part of this, is Benavidez has said in the past, I'll never fight in Saudi. He went over to Saudi for Bivol Beterbiev 2, and there were rumors that he left immediately. It didn't, you know, he didn't leave with a deal. There was Samson Lukowicz steadfast that, you know, we're loyal to PBC. We're going to fight over here. Next thing you know, Benavidez is now fighting in Riyadh. We've seen this happen to a lot of fighters who say, Canelo, a lot of guys that say that they won't ever do it, and they end up doing it because of money. And that's fine. I think any of us would have done the same, especially if you're a prize fighter. Get that money while you can, and it's there. That's an interesting wrinkle to this. Is Benavidez done headlining shows in the U.S.? Because that, if you look at the PBC, what's left of the PBC, it's Tank, big pay-per-view events, selling tickets. And Benavidez was headlining pay-per-views. And, you know, 12,000 fans were at the Morel fight. It wasn't full to the max, but he was carrying a pay-per-view and he was carrying an event. Now that he's fighting over in Riyadh, I'm curious to see what happens after this. Does he go back next year to fighting in Vegas, or is he now a Saudi guy?
Well, I think it's going to depend on David Benavidez. You know, a guy like him, and listen, he's in the driver's seat because he does sell tickets, but money's money. And he might go over to Riyadh and be like, I don't like this atmosphere. I don't like the way that this is over here. I'm more comfortable back where I am in the States. And I like crowds. I miss the crowds. I miss my fans, miss my people. I can understand. So he can decide.
That's what he said in that interview.
Yeah, it would be a real shame if we lost a U.S. ticket seller. You know, hey, good for him making the money. I appreciate that. And like I've said before, like if the big fights are being made, I don't necessarily care that they're not here. But there's just something different about fights on the U.S. soil with the fan bases that are here. And if you take all of our ticket sellers away, ticket selling is going to go out the door. It's not going to be a thing anymore. It's going to go to the wayside. It's going to be like dinosaurs, man. It's going to go extinct. And that would be a real shame because we don't have a lot of ticket sellers here. We're not the UK. Everyone sells over there. They're just a rabid fan base. We don't have that, and we could very easily lose it.
Yeah. All right, well said, and I totally agree. We'll see what happens. This kind of came together really fast. It was supposed to be Benavidez was supposed to be headlining a PBC pay-per-view event in September or November. October-ish. That was the plan up until this weekend. And then now he's fighting Yard over in Saudi. Could change. He could be... Another thing, too, before we wrap up here, and we'll talk more about it as it unfolds, Beterbiev and Bivol situation has become extremely murky. Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, they're right back to, like, where they started before they even fought each other. It was, like, the mystery. They should fight. They should not fight. But it turns out that the third fight was supposed to be in Saudi, right? Turkey was going to, he pushed for it. You know, Bivol was there with Bivol and Benavidez were flirting with a fight. And Turkey says, no, I want the third fight. Beterbiev, Bivol. It's going to happen here on this, supposed to be in this November card. And then it kind of just like dissipates. And Bivol is stripped of a title. Benavidez gets elevated. We're still thinking we're going to get Beterbiev, Bivol on a Riyadh season card in the fall. But now it turns out that both of them asked Turkey's permission for the fight to be staged in Russia with different organizers, and Turkey gave his blessing. And which we thought now, okay, so they'll fight sometime this year for the third fight and wrap up this trilogy, because I want to see Bivol against Benavidez. I want to see him against some of these other lightweights. I mean, I want to see fresh matchups for Bivol. But it turns out, now Beterbiev says, I have no idea when the fight's going to be. And is he waiting me out? He had a great line, Deanne. How old are you going to wait for this third fight? How old are you going to wait for me to get for this third fight? So now this third fight that I think fans are like kind of torn on if they want to see it or not, I don't, yeah, is now in oblivion. Like it's out there and we don't know when it's going to happen, where it's going to happen, and if Benavidez is ever going to get a shot at one of these guys.
yeah, I think that fight, the rematch lost its luster because of how the second fight went. And you know, we spoke about that. And then when the Benavidez Bivol fight was dangled, everyone was like, oh, I want that. I don't want the third fight. I want that fight. And then we lost that. And I just don't think the fanfare for the rematch, the rubber match, is really there anymore. And if you don't have people driving, Turkey doesn't really move the needle like that. If he doesn't make, he doesn't press the button unless the people are pushing for something. He really does listen to the fans. He listens to the people out there. He listens to the critics. And if there's not a big lust for that fight, then it's going to fall to the wayside the way that it has.
Yeah. And if there were fans that wanted it, they don't want it to happen next year. Like, think about it. Like, that's so far away. The first two fights were so close. I don't see it like being a different type of fight. It's going to be another nip and tuck battle that Bivol
super probably high level chess back and forth. You know, like,
I've seen it already. We've seen it. You don't need a third one. Don't need a third one. I want to see Bivol versus Benavidez, and now we could be getting ready for that this fall. We're not. We're getting Benavidez, getting kind of just getting played again. This guy just can't get the big fighting. I do think Bivol Benavidez will happen eventually because Bivol is 33, 34, and Benavidez hasn't even turned 30 yet. If he has, he's 30. Horrible with ages. But, yeah, it's just a crap situation right now. And hopefully it changes and we get a resolution here. But in the meantime, Benavidez Yard, good consolation prize. And Haney Norman's I'm okay on that card. Yeah, exactly. Good card. Haney Norman's on that card and Abdullah Mason Noakes. That is a freaking fight card.
There's a lot of talent. A lot of talent on that card. And some of my favorite fighters are fighting that card. So that's great. And I'm impressed with the Norman-Haney matchup. You got two young guys in their prime putting it on the line. I love that. It's harkening back to the 80s here. This is good. This is trending in the right direction for the sport.
Yep, that's in November. That'll be on our year-end award show. Thank you, everyone that voted. We will be back later in the week with a little bit of a preview episode of Taylor Serrano 3 and this Shakur, what was he fighting? Cepeda and Shiraz Berlanga and Matias versus Puello and the return of David Morrell. So a lot of fights this weekend. We'll preview them all. I don't know where we'll be in this continental USA, but we'll get it done. Enjoy your week. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.